Now, our book club selection today is a new murder mystery, which I'd describe as kind of Agatha Christie meets Richard Osman. Why do I say that? Well, in the Osman column, we've got a group of friends confronted by a suspicious death, doing a bit of amateur sleuthing. In the Christie column, we've got the setting, an isolated country house, everybody locked in for the weekend, unable to leave, unable to summon help. And that classic sort of locked room scenario with a whole pool of contenders who might be the killer, but might also be the next victim. And you spend the entire book second guessing and following elaborate plots, twists and turns, and a couple of red herrings in all good mystery traditions. They're all there. But what makes this book more than just a sort of an homage to Agatha Christie is the wonderful characters that have been created by the author Oscar Jensen, and the very firm stamp of his own plot and the contemporary setting which he puts on this genre. The book is called Helle and Death, H-E-L-L-E. Helle and Death, I think most people are pronouncing it, although we'll ask the author to confirm that for us in just a moment. But to tell you a little bit more about him, he is an author and academic who is currently a fellow at Newcastle University, where he's researching the history of song and of pop music. 3 history degrees from Oxford under his belt. That will be significant when I start telling you about the plot. But he's got a very wide range of interests, and he's written across multiple genres, from non-fiction to children's fiction, and now an adult novel as well. And I hope it's not going to be the last adult novel. I really hope he is going to consider giving his main character at least one more outing, because I thoroughly enjoyed the book. Oscar Jensen, it's wonderful to have you with us on the show today. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Pippa. It's great to be here. Do not worry, he will return.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that. He's one of my favourite detectives already, and I've only met him in one book. But Oscar, we'll talk a little bit more about what I loved so much about him. Can I just check, Helle and Death, Helle and Death, it's a Danish character in the book. How would you pronounce his name?
Well, so his name is Torben Helle. A slightly Swedish pronunciation. Yep. It's a bit silly. And Helle just means sort of bright in the Scandinavian languages. But Of course, he's living in England, so everyone just says Helle. So I had this idea that, you know, you could have a whole series of books that are just then puns on the word Helle. The second one is going to be Hell's Hound. I've got about 20. People keep suggesting more. So by all means, call the title Helle and Death. It's a bit of a nod to the way people keep mispronouncing Hercule Poirot as well.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's also speaks to a very important sort of theme in this book, which is how much the way we speak marks us as belonging in certain places or not belonging in certain places. So before I dive into that, let me just say for listeners who don't know anything at all about this book, we have a group of 8 friends who had all studied together at Oxford. They have drifted apart to some extent over the ensuing decade. One of them has gone off and made an absolute fortune in the world of tech. Some of them have become lawyers and artists and academics. One of them is a police officer. Torben Helle is an art historian. And the tech millionaire invites them all to come together for the weekend in his very fancy country home off in the remote countryside. And they get more than they bargain for. It's not just a friendly reunion. Firstly, they find themselves stuck there by a significant snowstorm. The lights go down. There are no phones on the property. And suddenly there is a dead body upstairs. And the question the book seeks to unravel is, was it suicide or was it murder? And if it was murder, who done it and who might be next? There's an awful lot of fun in between, though. Oscar, let's talk about the choice of this genre. You obviously, there's affection for the genre shining through this book. Were you a reader of Agatha Christie novels growing up, or is it something you've stumbled upon during the course of your own studies? What made you decide you wanted to pay tribute in the way you've done?
Oh, there is deep love for this genre. And interesting, actually, since writing that first book, it has become something that has crept into my own studies. Mm-hmm. But I can't really talk about that yet, because I've found something in the British Library that is going to blow open the history of detective fiction. But that is a story for another day. No, like most readers, really, this comes from a childhood love of Agatha Christie, I think, and then later on finding a lot of other great authors. I need to credit my friend Caroline Crampton, a South African herself, and her podcast She Done It, which as far back as 2017, I think, was doing fortnightly episodes on the history of golden age detective fiction. And having put it aside for years, I suddenly remembered, wait, these things are fantastic. And there are just so many more authors than Christie from the 20s and 30s and 40s in particular that are well worth reading. So this is a homage to her, but to many other of those authors too.
Okay. Now I mentioned language. Let's dive in there. Oscar, your main character, Torben, is fabulous. He is this witty observer, and he has become the observer partly because he has been an outsider. He's had the experience of growing up in Denmark and then coming across to Oxford to study. And 10 years later or so, he is still living in the UK. And the way he has watched the society and tried to learn the language, and he's acutely aware of the way language marks us as belonging or not belonging, and it says a lot about sort of class mobility in the UK. Can you elaborate a little bit? I mean, there's so many of these characters in one way or another who are aware of the fact of how they speak and how it makes them stand out as belonging or being accepted or not. What made you want to explore that?
Oh, well, firstly, I love that you have fixed on that and pointed that out, because that's something that no one else has really focused on as yet. And it is absolutely central. and it's central to the writing, but it's also central to the plot. Yeah. I felt this is a whodunit. It has to obey the rules. It has to be a puzzle that you can solve. And one of the key points of that is you don't throw anything in there that isn't somehow relevant. You don't just waffle on about something distinct. And there are clues to the readers that paying close attention to language might become significant at certain points. There are tells, there are jokes which are not just there for light relief. They are there because they mean something, and they mean things to people too. Now, I don't know how far Saltburn has hit South Africa. It's been a big film over here, certainly, for quite a while now. And of course, I wrote this long before I think that was even, well, before I was aware of that film. Yeah. But again, there we have the idea of an outsider coming into high society at exactly the same time, actually, because they're contemporary with my characters who went up to Oxford in 2006, by pure coincidence, the same year that I did. Torben Heller maybe has certain things in common with me. And that setting and that background is because it's the one I know. It's where I happen to go to university. But also it puts you right at the center of an awful lot of those debates, those concerns, issues of class and snobbery that are really at the heart of detective fiction from a century ago as well, and so essential to the idea of the English experience. And I needed someone who was a slight outsider to that so they could commentate upon it. But we're not talking about someone deeply underprivileged here. You know, Torben is still fairly middle class. He's a grammar school educated boy. He's white. He's in those respects very much like me as well. But there's just enough distance to be able to look back, step back, and reveal something about this world he's been in. And of course, this is a novel in which everyone was at Oxford, but that was now sort of, well, 10 years ago for all of them.
Yes.
And writing it in my own early 30s, having done 3 degrees, as you say, there, and then finally escaped into the more real world of other academic institutions. I mean, it's all relative. That sense of these places, looking back, thinking that, God, that was a really weird time in my life, wasn't it? But how formative that is. And in the UK political system, it's very hard to get away from how dominant and formative that is in our national culture as well. So it seemed really relevant. It is a matter of life and death because it affects what happens in the country.
You know, it's not just in the UK system. So much of it resonated with me as a South African. And in particular, I'm going to read a little quote from much later in the book, and I'm going to skip a few bits so that it's not a spoiler for anybody. But there is
a character
reflecting back on how some of them feel about another character, and saying the resentment against the system, against the people to whom it all comes naturally, like it's a birthright. People who can make conversation and get the references, who can get away with expressing themselves through their clothes and their opinions, how difficult it can be for those of us who spent our entire childhoods working so hard, sacrificing everything to finally get to the place that was meant to be our paradise, our reward, only to find out for one reason or another that we still felt like we were on the wrong side of the gates. And I mean, I read that, I just thought, that is going to ring so true for so many in this country with all of its crazy and often totally irrational markers of who belongs where, and our history. I think it resonated so hard for me. The other thing that I sort of spoke very deeply to me among these characters is they've had this incredibly privileged educational opportunity to be at the most, you know, incredible, distinguished university in the world. And yet, 10 years on, they're quite a miserable bunch, aren't they? I mean, Anthony Dodd, the tech millionaire, is alone in this massive country house. All that money and professional success hasn't bought him health or happiness. The academics in the group have got the impressive degrees and the intellectual credibility, but they living from hand to mouth. They don't have job security or financial security. You have some unhappily married. You have some who are in a career rut. I mean, that privileged education hasn't exactly guaranteed them success and happiness, has it, Oscar?
Gosh, this makes it sound a lot more cynical and sad than I realised, but that's all true. And a lot of that is written from experience, from things around me. I think it does reflect the state of much of the world today. I think it's important that we recognise that you can have so many things either loaded in your favour or that you have achieved in that way, and it's still there are still these problems. But it just exposes some of the things about a system. I mean, not to take it too seriously, this is a light-hearted detective novel, but it is in some ways a post-Brexit novel, but also something that exists very much in a world, a post-Trump world, in a culture wars world. Yeah. And I think the things I'm trying to pinpoint in that quote are that it doesn't necessarily map on to how you vote in some of those things or those alignments. There are other things involved and the grievances of the system. It's not about one half versus another half. It's about, I think, a far more universal sense of human experience against something far smaller. But I don't want to exaggerate the any of the bleakness here. The weather is very bleak in the book, but I've really tried to ensure that there is a lot of fun and happiness despite the fact that maybe someone is dead at the same time.
Absolutely. And I'll just reiterate that for all that we've said, and there's some really interesting themes to explore. At its heart, this is a really fun read. It is a page turner that will keep you guessing and trying to work it out. And just when you think you've got it, something will change and there'll be a new set of footprints in the snow outside. Now, speaking of the snow, I mean, it's such an atmospheric setting. And I read it and I got to the end and my immediate thought was, oh, somebody's got to turn this into a book or a movie or a TV series. I see one of our listeners on the WhatsApp. Like is saying, do you write stories with the hope that they might make it to the screen? Do you allow yourself to think of that, or is that something that comes after the mammoth task of first finishing the novel?
I mean, you could maybe get a campaign going that would be very helpful. Okay, I mean, sure. I do hope. I very much hope, and there are regular adaptations and say things like Knives Out and Glass Onion as another sort of contemporary version of a Golden Age story was part of my thinking and inspiration here too, that updating of the classic whodunit for the present generation. Since writing it, I've become very closely involved in a completely different film project, actually. I've been working very closely with a writer-director on a screenplay and film, and I have learned so much from that process that I think will feed back into future novels just on cuts and timing and where things go, but they are very different arts as well. So the problem when you really start thinking like that is that they get very short. And in fact, the first draft of Hell and Death was about 30,000 words shorter because I was almost thinking about it like a screenplay, like something you could see. And Agatha Christie novels are always quite short and very taut. So there wasn't that much description. The background characterization was fairly, well, tight, I would say. Other people would say non-existent. And the process of then finalizing the book was very much, no, let's put more of that in. Let's make it more novelistic in a way. And I think that's really worked to its benefit. But then a lot of that would then be undone in the process of realizing it on the screen. I think it would be an excellent sort of three-parter Sunday night affair.
Yeah.
I'd love to see it done. And it is the thing to think about. Now I know what costs stuff because we've been budgeting this other film.
Yeah.
And I'm now aware of, okay, well, I've got these big set pieces. The second one, there's a lovely thing involving at least 100,000 people. And that's not going to be able to be staged, I would say. But
a country house in the middle of nowhere with 8 people locked inside, certainly your set costs are going to be reduced and no need to travel.
That's very doable,
definitely doable. Well, as I said, if you need a South African fan club to start the motion to suggest that this should happen, I'll be happy to sign up. I'm so delighted to have heard you said at the start that you intend to make Torben a recurring character because he is this wonderful mix of you know, intelligent and erudite, but with his foibles and his own, in some points, inability to see his own weaknesses. I won't say more than that, but I think he would be, he's wonderfully flawed, you know, and he's not the only narrator, by the way. The book does shift between the perspective of other characters too, but it is Torben you sort of wind back to in between all of those. So, okay, I don't know how much you can tell us, if anything, about where he goes next or how long we'll have to wait to find him in a new setting?
Oh, he will return at the same time next year, which is a nice thing to say. You know, it's sort of 12 months on from release of the first one. There will be the second one, Hell's Hound. This takes him to London. Some of the characters are still there with him, those who survived in part. And it will be a direct homage to a very different novel, a detective novel of an earlier era. I think from the title Hell's Hound, you might be able to guess what it is. And then hopefully we'll see him go to other glamorous locations, Venice, a transatlantic cruise, maybe South Africa one day. Who knows?
Fantastic.
But for now, we have him in a snowbound mansion, and I think he's quite happy there.
Well, I certainly enjoyed meeting him there. Oscar, lovely to have you with us on the show this afternoon. Thank you so much for your time. Oscar Jensen, the author of Hella and Death, which is published by Viper and is being distributed in South Africa by Jonathan Ball Publishers.